Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
A very good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Macquarie, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bunbury Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your Sabre calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Very sad. Rates of diabetes and pregnancy continue to rise in the Northern Territory. We're going to catch up a yarn with lead author Menzies, PhD student and specialist physician, Dr. Matthew Hare. Got him online. Doctor, a very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. I'm good, thanks. Good to be with you.
Lovely. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Look, sad affair in regarding numbers rising, regarding diabetes and pregnancy that continue to rise in the Northern Territory. So tell us about the findings and how we can fix it, please, sir.
Yeah, so we've just had a look at the last 30 years of information in the NT at pregnancies of both Aboriginal women and non-Aboriginal women across the Territory and shown that there are very high rates of diabetes and pregnancy now compared to 30 years ago. We're seeing high rates of diabetes diagnosed in young women before they get pregnant, so they're entering pregnancy already with a diagnosis of diabetes, as well as a lot of women getting diagnosed with gestational diabetes during the pregnancy.
So with that, Doctor, you mentioned that women have picked up diabetes before pregnancy, so they go into the pregnancy with diabetes. So is there education that need to be done before pregnancy, yeah?
Yeah, we really encourage people to check in with their clinics before pregnancy, if possible, to look at how they can optimise their health and be screened for diabetes, because being on treatment and improving blood sugar levels and things before a pregnancy are really important to improving the health outcomes during the pregnancy as well. But there's a lot of big picture systematic issues that need to be addressed in relation to this, because it's pretty concerning that a lot of young people are getting what used to be a kind of chronic disease for older mob, and looking at what are the driving factors behind
it. But younger mob are picking up the so-called disease, so that's not good from the get-go, is it?
Yeah, exactly. And we think this is rooted in a whole lot of big picture issues like food security, poverty, discrimination, loss of culture since colonisation, yeah. A whole lot of factors.
And so a lot more work should be done in this space, probably if not ads or you know, incentives for young ones to come to the doctors, so to speak. A lot more work needs to be done in this space, yeah?
Yeah, look, I think we need to improve the messaging and reduce the stigma about this, encourage young people to get to clinics and get tested and get the help that they need, and also to make the treatments acceptable and things to young people. There's a lot of work to be done there. But we also need to think about how do we prevent this in the long term. And this is partly why we focus a lot on pregnancy, because we think that if we look after a mum's health before and during pregnancy, it actually improves the long-term health of the baby in the long run during their own life.
Exactly. Now, of course, with a lady with diabetes and then being pregnant, diabetes is passed on to the child. Is that the case?
Yeah, so there may be a genetic element to some of these things. There's information from studies overseas, not so much in Australia, but showing that if a mum has diabetes during pregnancy, her offspring, her baby is more likely to get diabetes in their own life and probably at a younger age than if they hadn't been exposed to that extra sugar during the pregnancy. So that's one of our main reasons for raising this as a kind of public health issue, is that there's this cycle happening with more and more young people getting diabetes at younger ages, which means they have it during pregnancy, which means things can be worse for the next generation. And so it's about turning around this intergenerational cycle. which is why we think looking after the health of young women is really important.
And doctor, with these findings, have we found that there are sort of age groups is what I'm asking in regard to the women being pregnant with diabetes?
Yeah, so in the older a woman is entering pregnancy, the more likely they are to have diabetes or get gestational diabetes during the pregnancy. But I guess the concerning thing is the current data that we're looking at is that even though a lot of mums are relatively young in their 20s, we're still seeing pretty high rates of diabetes, and that's a change from the past.
Sure. All right. So with the space you're working in, very, very important to have the education out there for our mob, especially for young ones. But thank you very much for sharing. And look, it's sad to see these numbers still continue to climb and we need to bring those numbers down in more ways than one. But thank you very much for sharing, Doctor. All the best to you and all the best to your team family. Stay safe, my friend.
No worries. Thanks so much. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye, Dr. Matthew. As Dr. Matthew Hare, his name is, he's lead author, Menzies PhD student and specialist physician, and talking about the rates of diabetes in pregnancy continue to rise in the Northern Territory. So we need to do our bit, your mob, and get our young ones out there to, all of us, we all need to have our doctor checkups and check out, do an annual checkup with our doctors and go to our First Nation health organisations. And do what you need to do, look after yourself, and especially our women out there in regard to bringing beautiful pickaninnies to the world. We need to make sure that you're safe and strong and healthy, so our babies are that way inclined as well. Very important conversation. Have your say, your mob. Yarn up strong. Add to the conversation here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416, number you need to call. Yarn in with the host, the bally one, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I'm taking you right through 12 noon Queensland time. So have your say and yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416. Live on First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbo Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Give me a call. Let's have a yarn. Too deadly.
DJ, DJ, Jilly, Korean, your Bama, Gakang, Undal. DJ, DJ, Jilly, Korean, your Bama, Gakang, Undal. DJ, DJ, Bual, Baran, your Wo, your Chundang. DJ, DJ, Bual, Baran, your Wo, your Chundang. Your Bama, Ngundal mundu warai muranji yor bama gakang ngundal mundu warai muranji yor ngalagaran giri giri abamanda yor ngalagaran giri giri abamanda DJ DJ bual baran yoran biganom bunjil DJ DJ bual baran yoran biganom bunjil
G'day folks, Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
A very good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns as BBM Bumber Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. We're going to catch up a yarn now with the chair of RACGP, and that's the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, and talk to the chairperson, Professor Peter O'Mara, on the line. Peter, very good morning. How are you?
I'm terrific, thanks, mate. And I'm the chair of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander faculty within the college.
All right, fantastic. Thank you for confirming that, and thank you very much for coming to the program. Let's talk about this particular space that you're working in and you've been the chair of. How long has been operation? How long have you been at the chair?
Yes, so I think I've been the chair for just going on for 4 years. It was originally set up as a faculty 10 years ago, and Brad Murphy was at the helm. He's a tackling in Queensland at the moment, working. And prior to that, it was a standing committee, and there were many people sort of involved with the establishment of that. So for quite some time now, RACGP has been taking Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health very seriously.
Okay, and today, well, you've launched our position statements to improve Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health care, a very important space. So yes. Tell us about that launch.
Yeah, so look, we really want to promote several things to the public in general, and also to other doctors, and particularly general practitioners. And you know, one of the challenges that we've had over the years is that doctors sometimes don't necessarily ask the question, are you Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander, to the mob? And if they don't know that, then there's a whole lot of things that they won't be doing in order to give us better health outcomes. So we need to make sure doctors are asking that question at a very minimal level.
Yeah, well, I think it's education, communication, two-way street. So we need that communication, very important at the table in regard to discussions with our mob, yes?
Oh, absolutely, mate. And I think we need to change the conversation too. You know, we want to get our doctors moving away from looking at everything in health for our mob through that biomedical lens. You know, we want doctors to understand that we have a lot of resilience and strength in culture. It's served us well for over 60,000 years, and
yes.
You know, that's where a lot of the solutions for our health disparities lie, I believe.
Well, an opportunity for practitioners to walk on the mile and their moccasins, so to speak, yeah? Their featherfoot in regard to that communication and that conversation, which is very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I've been lucky enough to be involved in this space where we've trained doctors for quite a few years now. And what I've seen over the years is that when we train doctors to do Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health well, they just become better doctors overall. So
yes.
When we train them to work with our mob, we're improving the quality of the doctor for any position. Now, of course, that you know, doesn't take away from how important our stuff is. You know,
exactly.
The people of this land, and unfortunately, we have the most amount of health problems as a group. But you know, working in the way that we do our business, you know, often around community control, and certainly listening to the patient, to the family and to the community, is going to serve everyone.
Well, we're talking about culturally appropriate health delivery systems as such, you know, and the communication of First Nation people. The revised position statements, what were some of the stuff that was included?
One of them was about identifying our patients as being Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander. There were quite a few things. It's about understanding culture. There's some, you know, we're looking at sort of standards where, you know, in every practice we'd expect that at least general practice, that is, at least two people will have done some significant cultural training that has to include Indigenous people as the defenders of that training, and at least one of those people needs to be the doctor. Because, you know, you can be met with some barriers as soon as you enter the practice when you're talking to the triage person,
yes,
or the folks behind the counter, and that's where we need to even start before that,
exactly,
in terms of making our people feel safe in that environment.
Very much so. In amongst your practitioners, any First Nation doctors involved?
Oh, yeah. So I'm not quite sure of the statistics overall, but
okay,
we might have about 500 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander doctors across the country.
Yes.
And in terms of a specialty training, a lot of the junior docs at the moment, so they're out there in the hospitals learning, yeah, continually learning their skills.
Yes.
And out of the specialty training, by far the majority of those come into general practice. And I suppose, you know, there's lots of reasons for that. And I think for me personally, I've seen that as the best way that I could make a big impact working with the mob. And I've been working at Tobobba Aboriginal Medical Service in New South Wales for about 20 years,
yes,
and at Werrin Aboriginal Medical Service in Port Macquarie for about 15 years. And they're both very rewarding jobs for me.
Good, fantastic. Well, it's a very important space you're working in. It's great to see that that space has been proactive in that sense and working with our mob. Thank you very much for the conversation there, Professor. All the best to you and your team and your family and the world that we live in at the moment, COVID-19. Look, stay safe, stay strong, and we'll talk soon, Professor.
Yeah, thanks, mate. You stay safe.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
De Leon there with Professor Peter O'Mara, and he's the chairperson of RACUBI, and that's the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, and talking about improving Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health care and the space that he's working in. So fantastic, and having communication with our First Nation doctors across the country, which is very important. As we know, black on black, can't beat that, but good to have black professionals dealing with non-Indigenous professionals to have that communication there as well. Fantastic. Have your say, your mob, yarn up strong. 1-800-422-416 is the number you need to call. Yarn up with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Macquarie, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BB and Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, and your daily program, you know it, National Talk Black. Give me a call, 1-800-422-416.
I can't be Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7. I remember the
day. It's time, Australia. Time for recognition. See, before our dark past, we had a black history. Now I ain't pointing no fingers and I ain't pushing no blame, I ain't silly. But what's happened in the past is time for recognition and work together. It's like this. They rather compensate us than give us recognition. In other words, they rather buy you out of your tradition. Cause when you recognise, that's how your culture survives. Many millenniums and thousands of tribes around the fire like a robbery. The writings of walls, it's like the truths in the past. They would rather us all dead, but we survivors. Through the spirit of my ancestors, thousands of years from behind us, yeah, that survives. Through the ignorance and arrogance and miseducation divides us, product of environment. Before all the grogs and the drugs, it was dreams that would guide us. Now we're stuck in violence, prison system confine us. Genocide undercovers, the stolen kids under silence. No wonder we tired, revolution is now. Australia can't stop us, we're taking back what is ours. Genocide, it was genocide. See the pain in my people's eyes. Steal my culture, deny my pride. But we survive, better recognize. Genocide, it was genocide. See the pain in my people's eyes. Steal my culture, deny my pride. But we survive, better recognize. They wanna breed out the pedigree, close down communities, broadcast the negative and highlight the bigotry. Yeah, they wanna white out our history with no recollection, just a white man's legacy. Don't believe me, ask Lad Hancock. Yeah, that's Gina's father, had a plan to poison the lot. You wanna stop the sons and daughters, put some poison in their water, then you wait a generation and peg out the lot. Now that's iron ore pimping, iron ore pimping. Blood on the hands from these iron ore victims. I'll run it, the government systems. Throw a little dollar, call the royalty for regions. Yo, this is black man's land. Always has, always will be black man's land. Over 70,000 years walking this land, then Cook came and went. Now we're living in a genocide, it was genocide. See the pain in my people's eyes. Steal my culture, deny my pride. But we survive, better recognize. Genocide, it was genocide. See the pain in my people's eyes. Steal my culture, deny my pride. But we survive, better recognize.
Here's my ancestors from this desert landscape. My
brother and sister are still alive. We I'm a voice for the indigenous, the lyricist, the spiritist.
Here's my ancestors from this desert landscape.
My brother and sister are still alive.
They must have thought they see aliens when them convict ships come sailing in. Crooks galore, criminal minds hit the shore. Guns go bang and their bodies hit the floor. Invaded, taken, raping, killed, slaved, chained, oppressed. Still we survivors. Yeah, hear that? We're survivors. Check it, we came from sacred places to racist times. Australia, it's time to recognise we're survivors. Yeah, hear that? We're survivors. Yeah, they'd rather compensate us than give us recognition. In other words, they'd rather buy you out of your tradition. Cause when you recognize, that's how your culture survives. Many millenniums and thousands of tribes.
And that's how it is, Australia. All we're looking for is a bit of recognition. And that's by working together as one and acknowledging the past history and moving forward. It starts at home with us around the dining table, how we teach our kids the next generation. It's all about understanding one's culture and being respectful of one's feelings. And together with that, we can move forward and have a positive Australia. We might have had a dark history, but best believe we've got a bright future.
A very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service, and you can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, privacy and public data order report. We're going to talk about that, and we're going to have a deadly yarn with a beautiful lady by name of Rachel Rangihaiara, Information Commissioner, and talk about that situation. We've got her on the line at the moment. Rachel, very good morning, my sister. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for inviting me on to talk to you today.
Thank you. We always say to beautiful people we yarn with, who your mob, where you're from. So who's Rachel Rangihaiara?
I am originally from New Zealand, and my husband is Māori from New Zealand as well.
Mm-hmm.
So he's from the Ngāti Toa tribe in North Island.
All right. Beautiful. So married into the family, my sister.
I well and truly have. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Fantastic. Talk about the space that you're working in as the Information Commissioner there, Rachel, regarding privacy and public data. In the world that we live in at the moment, the 21st century and computers and what have you, are you finding that there is higher risk for people's private information being exposed?
Look, there is a real possibility of that, and that's why we thought this was very important work to do. What I think is really important here is that everyone in their personal lives and at work is handling their own and other people's personal information in a changing environment, which presents different risks, and we need to ensure we're aware of how these risks change because of this, and that we have good systems or protections in place to safeguard this important information. So we always say to government officers that they're custodians of the community's information, and they must take great care to safeguard that information. And our privacy laws really provide a bit of a roadmap that helps them ensure they do the right thing in
different
situations.
And they mean to do the right thing, but there are a few, potholes.
Absolutely, and in different states and the Commonwealth, I've found in previous situations that is absolutely the case, that it has been well-intentioned, but it's really quite complex, it's quite difficult, and in some cases when people publish data online and they think that they have taken all the personal information out so people can't be identified in that data, in fact, other people have been able to find people in that data. So it's a difficult one to navigate, and people need guidance, and that's what we've been doing for a few years now, like our colleagues in other different areas and in, around the world as well.
Exactly.
But we wanted to get a bit ahead of the game and do an audit in our case and see how Queensland government agencies are going and provide some recommendations that will update our guidance, which we've done, and ensure that we really turn their attention to it and make sure that they are safeguarding Queenslanders' privacy.
Yes. So your Office Information Commission audit report on privacy and public data was tabled in Parliament in July 2020, early this month. What were the findings as such?
Yes, look, we looked at two different agencies, but we made recommendations for all government agencies in Queensland. And we said to all of them, and we wrote to every chief executive officer in Queensland government agencies, and we said, look, you really need to review all the published data and right now and identify which data sets contain this, what we call de-identified data, where they think that they've taken out what you can identify people in. And if you do have any of these data sets, you need to make sure that you have certain things in place to ensure that it can't be re-identified, and you need to keep checking that. So a range of systems and processes, and have good governance around this and ensure that you're managing that risk now and into the future.
Look, it could be human error, but also it could be a fault into their system and how they transfer this information, yes?
Yes, and just not keeping track of it over time, not knowing if you've got these data sets out there, and not having someone responsible for them. And they're the sorts of things that really let everyone down.
Exactly.
Because particularly when these risks change over time, as more information is available on the web, for example, and people go, can match it up.
Exactly,
And that's one thing that changes a lot. Because as we know, more and more information on the web, and we find out new information through social media and things like that. So you can match it up and find out more. So what used to be a safe data set might not be next year.
And the information that people can or do or have access to marrying up that information, it can then be, a personal approach or attack or engagement with individuals or companies, which is not a good space to be in.
Yeah, and look, we were particularly concerned about vulnerable groups that could be identified. Where you've got data sets that go down to individual lines about different people, so they're not grouped, they would have a line in it, for example, that was about me, and my name is out, but it would say where I was born, what my postcode is, what my background is, you know, what my cultural background is, whether I have a disability, whether I've applied for a certain assistance.
But even the personal stuff as well. I mean, like, broken up marriage or, for example, domestic violence, leaving an ex or what have you,
Family and domestic violence.
Yes.
And that was something we pointed out in our report, that there could be very serious consequences if people are identified, because you could, say, with the postcode example, it could narrow down for someone that had a certain amount of information, they knew someone within a data set. What they could do is figure out where they were now located, at least down to their suburb, and then that information.
And that's scary.
Other information. It is scary. Mm. And that's why people need to take it really seriously. And we've been quite proactive in asking agencies make this very seriously.
Well, the protection of community should be front and centre. What is the ramification if government agencies make this mistake?
So, if they do make this mistake, as I said, it can have really serious consequences for their stakeholders, clients, and even staff as well.
Yes.
Because some of the data sets are about their staff, which could be an even smaller data set.
Mm.
And it can really undermine public confidence and trust in government agencies.
Exactly.
And then people can feel reluctant to provide information to government because they're worried whether it'll be safe.
Mm, exactly.
And that might mean they can't use an online government service, for example, which may make it harder to access the service, costing them time or money, or they might feel like they miss out altogether.
Sure. And when we're talking government agencies, well, we're talking about the government of this country, and they should be, strong in their defence for information to be leaked or people to access this information.
You know, as I said, they're the custodians; they're entrusted.
Exactly. Yes.
To keep it safe, and in a lot of cases, we don't have a choice in providing this information to government.
Mm-hmm.
So, really, the responsibility is extremely high.
Okay.
And that's what we really do make very clear when we talk with government leaders. And we also make clear that it's everyone's responsibility throughout the agency, because everybody can breach privacy.
Yes.
We all handle personal information.
We do.
And, but in terms of if somebody is concerned particularly, say, if someone's approached and they feel like they're not quite sure how this could have come about, but they're concerned that it is because of a data set, but perhaps they have some information.
Before going into a conversation or exposing any more information, they can get in touch with you guys?
Look, yes, we have an inquiry service and we can certainly provide assistance.
Mm.
And I would also encourage your listeners, if they do feel like they've got information that has come about because of an agency's data set, if they think that they know a bit of information about that, to go and talk to the agency and see if they can find out more or raise their concerns with them. But if they're not sure, they can certainly call our inquiry service. And we've got great people on the inquiry service to talk to, and they're here every Monday to Friday.
Do you have a number there, Rachel, for that?
I certainly do. It's a free call number. It's 1-800.
1-800.
1-800-642-753.
That number again, 1-800-642-753.
That's right.
Lovely.
And you can also visit our website. We've got a great lot of information on there. It's www.com. oic.
So OIC?
Yes, OIC. qld.gov.au.
So that's all the W's, oic.qld.gov.au. Lovely.
That's right.
Beautiful.
And you're welcome to email us as well. All our contact details are on our website. We've got a range of information, including a guideline around this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And our audit report is also on there. But please get in contact with us if you have any concerns. If you want to find out about how to make a complaint, we've got information there and we're really happy to talk to you. So please just be aware too of your personal privacy.
Exactly.
When you're in your everyday dealings, because we're our first line of defence.
Yes.
And our awareness and what we do and all our individual choices is really important too. So we're on the ball with
yes.
Ensuring our government is doing the right thing and reminding them of their responsibilities and making it clear
Lovely.
What we expect.
Dotting the I's, crossing T's. Well, Rachel, thank you so very much. This is not a private conversation. It's going across the airwaves to let the people know that you are there to support them, help them and protect them. And thank you so very much, Rachel.
Thanks so much for having us on. Really lovely to talk to you.
You too. All the best, your sis. You take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
A deadly yarn there with Rachel Rangihaiara, and she's the Information Commissioner, and we're talking about the Privacy and Public Data Audit Report, and after the findings of the Office of the Information Commissioner's Audit Report on Privacy and Public Data was tabled in Parliament back in early July 2020. So our information are protected, that's what it's all about, and if you feel as though people have got information on you and you really want to know why or how, then you can contact the Information Commissioner, and the number there is 1-800-642-753, or check out their webpage as well, all the www.oic.qld.gov.au. But first of all, talk to the agency and find out where they got the information, what have you, because we are protected in that sense in regarding privacy. To Daily Mob, but this is not private, this yarn. Have a yarn here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416, and tell us how you really feel. This is your daily program, National Talk Black, and we're taking you right up to 12 noon Queensland time. Yarning with Baldy on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and we're live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give the Murray a call, let's have a yarn. Too deadly.
The story's right, the story's true. I would not tell lies to you. Like the promises they did not keep, and how they fenced us in like sheep. Said to us, come take our heed, set us up on mission lane, told us to read, to write and pray. Then they took the children away, took the children away, the children away. Snatched from their mother's breast, said this is for the best, took them away. Well, them in the police name, said you've got to understand, we'll give to them what you can't give. My mother cried.
man stood his ground. He said, you touch my kids and you fight me. Then they took the stronger family, took us away. They took us away.
It's me, Bushtaka Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Makaran!
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Let me start with Kuma Jai Walker. Deirdre Shorty was someone's daughter. Nathan Reynolds and Melissa Dunn. Eddie Russell, someone's son. Malcolm Smith and Roy James Boney. Joyce Clark, who was someone's aunt. Tony Chatfield and Bradley Coolwell. Monty Salt, who was someone's uncle. Bruce Les and Maureen Mandajara. Milton Wells, who was someone's father. Clarence Neen, Veronica Baxter. Muriel Binks, someone's mother. Douglas Scott and Greg Dunlop. Faith Barnes, I'll keep on going. There's Harrison Day, Trevor King, and Charlie Michael. It ain't nothing, cause I got more. Like Alistair Riversley, Charlie Highlights, just too easy. There's Barbara Yarry, and Kristen Jones, and Roy Walker. And on it goes, then Daniel York, then Sheldon Cullen, then Dixon Green. Oh, someone stop me. We'll be right back.
A very good morning, your Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First National Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumper Boop Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your saber callings on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. So we'll get into it. And now, Mob are encouraged to keep supporting each other through parent-to-parent connection. I'm going to catch up a yarn now with QFCC Commissioner, and that's Natalie Lewis, acronym for Queensland Family and Child Commission. On the line we have Natalie. Good morning. How are you, sis?
Good morning. Yeah, I'm going well, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. Look, a very important conversation. COVID-19 has really turned our world upside down, but we are resilient people, First Nation people, and regarding the connection, which is very important, and you're stating the fact that Mob are encouraged to keep supporting each other through parent-to-parent connection, which is a fantastic tool to making us stronger, yes?
Yeah, look, absolutely. You know, and I think that was one of the biggest worries, you know, as we came into that was that impact of isolation, you know, separating us and, you know, putting that distance between those, you know, in our families and in our networks, you know, that really help us through difficult times. But, you know, Mob are creative, you know, and you know, I've really been encouraged by, you know, listening to, you know, the feedback from a lot of particularly Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community controlled organisations.
Yes.
That, you know, the use of innovation, the use of technology, you know, we've been able to, you know, find a way to keep connected and actually seen a real upswing in that sort of, you know, help-seeking behaviour even outside of our normal networks, you know, of friends and family.
Well, we are strong and we belongs to making that yarn, aren't we? And if the yarn's not happening, then it can get very lonely and dark place. So the conversations are strong, and by whatever medium is available, whether it be FaceTime or phone call, text or smoke signal, whatever the case may be, I see.
yeah, for sure.
Fantastic. And so how long have you been in that role, Natalie, as the commissioner there?
So I'm a bit of a newbie as the commissioner. I haven't quite hit 2 months here yet, but, you know, I've been working in the sector. I've sort of come from the Queensland Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Child Protection Peak, yes, where I was the CEO there for about 8.5 years. So, you know, just a different way of, you know, of engaging with the work, that's all.
Enjoying that journey?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I can't wait to be able to actually get out there and have those yarns and you know, get on the ground and talk to young people and families and service providers. And, you know, it's been a little bit, you know, going a little stir crazy. Being
exactly
here in the office. But, but yeah, that's certainly my plan.
And regarding COVID-19, as it hit this big island, February, March, how did you guys navigate through all this?
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, from a personal perspective, I mean, I really, I've got to, you know, I felt totally out of depth in terms of the homeschooling. It was, you know, like, and all of those new challenges that sort of emerged.
Yes.
And, you know, not being able to, really manage the different routines, you know, keeping my little one, you know, focused on schoolwork, making sure he wasn't looking at, you know, slam dunk competitions on YouTube, you know, and, yeah, so trying to balance that, you know, really stretched me, and I'm not ashamed to say that it was a struggle. You know, some days it still is, but I think that we get that reality check and that sort of, you know, hope that things are going to be all right, you know, by being able to share our experiences and, you know, talking to people that are going through the same thing, you know.
Well, exactly. So we're walking through a dark tunnel. I mean, all governments across the globe, as well as people in general. You know, this is a pandemic that has hit the globe, and like I said, turned the world upside down. Uncharted waters, but blessed are the flexible and being strong. And what we're talking about regarding keeping connected, which is so very important. Thank you very much for sharing, Natalie. Very, very good information and very important information. And good luck with what you're doing, and all the best, and stay safe, and we'll be on soon, Natalie.
Yeah, great, thanks.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Diddley, with Natalie Lewis, her name is. She's the Commissioner for QFCCC, that's the Queensland Family and Child Commission. And look, a very important message there is mob are encouraged to keep supporting each other through parent-to-parent connection and by any means necessary, as she pointed out, whether it be by text or telephone or, you know, yarn across the fence, any which way. But connection is very important, which makes us stronger, and we need to keep doing it. And that's the message there from QFCCC. Have you say your mob, yarn up strong, yarning up here on National Talk Black. That daily number here is 1-800-422-416. Call that number, yarning with the Baldy One, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Macquarie, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. And I come to you live from the First Nation radio station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummer Brip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. So give me a call, let's have a yarn, 1-800-422-416.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
The moonlight shines down on sacred ground. Tribal men are gathering round that firelight to dance in the moonlight. Singing and dancing, clapping sticks and boomerangs to the didgeridoo sound.